We're talking about the history of humanity and how we have been influenced. And it's like, we deserve to know that. And we deserve the technologies that are being suppressed.
We're being exposed to only so much information. We're not being fully educated. There's a difference.
What percentage of UAP sightings, in your belief, go unreported by our pilots?
I would estimate we're somewhere near 5% reporting, perhaps. 5% reporting.
There isn't
perhaps,
anything, 5%. Then why the push to cover it up? Then why the
We must
push
guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
By then, I had already accepted this new paradigm of there being, as Senator Inouye said, and I'm quoting, there's a secret government with its own Air Force,
its own Navy, his own fundraising mechanism, and the ability to pursue his own ideas of the national interest, free from all checks and balances, and free from the law itself. Free from the law itself.
Thank you for tuning into our podcast. We have created a referendum known as the It Can't Be a Joke Revolution and Initiatives. This is a movement of thought and consciousness. Our mission is to educate and plant the seeds of curiosity surrounding the issues that we deem most critical, with the goal of freeing humanity from the powers that seek to hold us down.
We use this as an opportunity to not only expose the corruption in our country and world, but to discuss the importance of consciousness, self-awareness, and spiritual evolution as we seek to crack the riddles of life and our purpose on this planet.
Melissa.
Kevin.
Let's blast off.
Let's.
Hey, everybody. We have a super exciting topic to discuss with you today, and something that we both have been researching a lot over the past year. It's been fascinating.
Yeah.
It draws us in. And it really seems to answer a lot of questions that we've been wondering about our whole lives. And the topic that we're talking about today is the Book of Enoch, as well as the Book of Giants, which both date to before the 2nd century BC. So we're dating back a very long time. And these are antediluvian texts, which are biblical pre-flood narratives that kind of explain a whole gap of time that the Bible that we know of as today has left out.
They call them non-canonical. Not part of the canon, the stuff that gets repeated, the stories.
Yeah.
You know?
Growing up, we were taught the Old Testament followed by the New Testament. I went to a Catholic school growing up and walked through all of it throughout all those years. You know, you dive into each book of the Old Testament, each book of the New Testament, and they teach you what's going on. And there's always still that question, though, how and what happened?
Yeah. You know, you hear about the flooding, the parting of the seas, all of these stories that I've always kind of thought were allegories.
Yeah.
You know,
because
you hear it so much and you're just like, okay, but how would that happen here?
Yeah, it was, they talk about the flood and the Old Testament, and that kind of was it. There was not much more before, you know, God created the world and 7 days and everything.
Genesis.
Yeah, everything was created. Then we had a huge flood and people were pretty wicked. What the Book of Enoch and the Book of Giants does is it explains why there was a flood. Way more background story than just, oh, you know, men were being bad. God is just going to blast the whole world with a flood because of that. There's so much more that they left out.
Yes, for their convenience, which we'll get into.
Exactly. When you share too much information and too much knowledge, too much insight, people are woken up. And it seems, you know, people in power that have all the power, they don't want the majority of people to be enlightened and free thinkers.
No, because they know that if they don't have that they can control them, like, you know, herding the sheep.
Exactly. And that's
basically this, you know, their thinking and why it's remained that way for so long.
For all of humanity. For our whole history.
Yeah.
There's always the people in power. And then we have, you know, we're all peasants.
Yeah.
Majority of people.
Imperial
and then the peasants.
Yep. Nothing's really changed throughout history. It's still the same exact way. We're just currently, now, we have smartphones and TVs and cars.
Right, I know.
But we're still peasants.
Yes.
They like to keep people working and in debt and stuck in that cycle.
It's because money wouldn't exist. There's the Federal Reserve, their system wouldn't exist because it's built on debt. They don't have money unless we owe them.
Right.
You know, it's a different topic for a different day, but that's, yeah,
it's
that's
on
it.
Topic though, because the people in power, there's these books that are in these ancient texts that they left out on purpose when they all met up in the Council of Nicaea, Carthage, and Hippo between the years 300 to 400 AD. And Constantine the First, you know, we know Emperor Constantine and the converting of the Roman Empire to Christianity. And that was with Emperor Constantine. And it was really to, it wasn't that Constantine is just, oh my gosh, I am so enlightened. And yes, it's God and he is the best. And he speaks the truth and peace and love and harmony. It's so he can control his empire better.
Yes.
Because
I feel, is that when it all started, that control of humanity?
Well, it's been going on a long time before that, because all the different, the Babylonian empires.
Yeah, and, it goes back further.
And the Babylonians were, they were worshiping the Anunnaki. And the Anunnaki directly correlate into these stories too.
Right, yeah.
Just like the ancient Roman religions, ancient Greek.
Right.
All those ancient religions, they correlate directly with what goes on in the Book of Enoch and the Book of Giants. And we're going to be talking about the fallen angels, the angels who turned against God. It wasn't just Lucifer. There was over 200 of them.
And don't they relate back to Thoth and those gods?
Yeah. The tablets of Thoth, right? Isn't it the Emerald tablets of Thoth?
Yeah.
Yeah, they all do.
And they all relate. And then I heard it, there's some relation to the Book of Enoch, to the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Yes.
Like there's all these stories that we don't hear. You have to go research it. You can find it. It's out there. You know, it's not stored in our subconscious mind.
You hear the story of Gilgamesh and you're like, an interesting story. You know, and he was this superhuman who was a leader of that time. And he went on his epic, his journey. And that has the correlation back to, we're talking Noah, the same time periods where you can just find the different names of the gods that are in these ancient religions. And it'll go back to perhaps that Noah could have been Zeus. There's those theories that are correlating the different religions to these ancient texts from, you know, Emerald Tablets of Thoth.
Yes.
Or the Book of Enoch.
Yeah.
The Book of Noah, which was also left out. There's a Gospel of Mary Magdalene.
There's one called the Book of Thomas that supposedly relates to what you're talking about, all this stuff. And I've never heard of that one.
It's crazy how much stuff that they left out.
Yeah. They chose, when you're talking about the Roman Empire, when they converted to Christianity, and we're going to tell the people this, this, and this. And everything we're talking about, I feel like, relates to all of this.
And it's way easier to control an empire with a unified religion that are all on the same page. You don't have a bunch of different people that are, you know, you got 10 different people who all worshiping different deities or gods. Get everyone under the same banner. Way easier to control. Just what Constantine wanted to do in the Byzantine Empire, which was the Eastern Roman Empire, the Byzantines.
Yes. Did they present the religion as more of, this is about your connection to God, your soul. This is all inside of you. You know,
that's a good question.
What I'm trying to say?
Yes. The idea is fear. What they wanted was a group of, you know, all of humans, everyone that they're ruling. They don't want them to be truly enlightened, to know the whole story. They want them to be afraid that they're going to go to hell. Unless you do what we say, which is yada, 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 these rules.
Yes.
And then you'll go to heaven. And then, you know, in the past that they were the Holy Roman Empire and the paying of indulgences. Basically, they'll say, if you pay us and you pay to the church, you'll help solidify your one-way ticket into heaven, because you're giving to the church, which is giving to God. It's just like today. Mm-hmm. It's just a huge money laundering scheme. Mm-hmm. So you have all the peasants coming, and they're giving all their money to the church, and they're poor. They can barely feed themselves, mm-hmm. while the church is taking in all this money, and they have, you can just imagine them sitting in whatever their mead hall, and they have all their beer and a huge turkey and a ham and all their food on the table, and they're just eating some grapes. Yummy.
Someone's fanning them.
Exactly. So what they wanted back then was, they're not going to tell them all the stories of the Bible. It's going to most likely be in another language that they don't understand. Mm-hmm. They might know the main concepts of it, mm-hmm. And the story of Jesus, he died for your sins, he died on the cross, follow the main Christian beliefs. Mm-hmm. We're going to be presented to them, but they don't really know the rest of it. They just know that they don't want to go to hell.
Right.
They don't want to go to hell. No one wants to go to hell.
Yeah.
So follow us and listen to us, because God is speaking to us through, through. So, and that's what drives me crazy too.
Taking away your power, your individual power.
Yeah. And people have told me in the past, the reason Catholic priests can't get married is because, and I was raised Catholic, I was baptized, confirmed. I've done the whole entire thing.
Yeah.
And that, because technically he's married to Jesus. That's why they can't get married, is because when they take their oath and their vow that they're married to Jesus. And there's a lot of people who would defend that argument still.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to sit back and say, what?
Yeah, right.
Like, that's craziness.
That was one of your Kelly's questions in your history class.
Exactly.
What did your students think?
Well, it's a fun question, because everyone's going to have an answer for it. And that's, if you're going to school to be a teacher, they teach you about the beginning of your lesson, you want to have a anticipatory set.
Yeah,
what they call it.
Your cold open.
Yes, make sure you have a good anticipatory set for the lesson. So mine was just called Kelly's Question, and I would have it up on the board, and it would be an open-ended question to have them ready to discuss, because I like to have lessons and classrooms that
open discussions are fun.
Open discussion, let's talk, let's figure it out, because that's the beauty of social studies, social sciences, is talking about these things. So the question was, it's very simple, we're comparing the Roman Catholic Church to the Eastern Orthodox Church, and my question was, do you think that priests should be able to get married? So everyone has an answer for that, or something that they think. You have a lot of people saying, yeah, of course. And a lot of people know, because the priests are, they're married to Jesus.
Hmm.
And it was an interesting one. But in the Eastern Orthodox Church, the patriarchs, which are the priests, they can get married.
Hmm.
And I find it funny that in the Catholic Church, no, they can't. And it doesn't make any sense to me. It's man-made, just like at the councils of Nicaea, Carthage, and Hippo. That's where they decided what books were going to be in the Bible.
Okay.
And that's also where the Nicene Creed was created, which, growing up, I think it was in fifth grade, we had to memorize the Nicene Creed. And it was a long, very long prayer. And the passage from it, I think a lot of people would know this passage if they were raised Catholic, or even if you weren't, maybe you've heard it before. The one that sticks out to a lot of people in the Nicene Creed is, we believe in one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. And then at the end, it says, we believe in one holy Catholic and apostolic church. So they're programming all their followers to pledge their allegiance to the church. The church that is run by a bunch of men who have done unspeakable, heinous crimes over the course of history.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at it. It's unbelievable, but they're programming people to say, in that creed, the Nicene Creed, we believe in one holy Catholic and apostolic church. I find that pretty interesting that they have that in there.
Right.
We believe in one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. Absolutely. I'm all on board. All on board with that.
Yeah. Like the universal mind. We all come from the same entity.
Yes.
The same spirit.
Yeah. Something created us.
Mm-hmm.
I do not believe one bit that everything here and all of our history and our story on this planet, that it all happened by chance out of a big bang 8 billion years ago. And no,
yeah,
that's just my personal.
Yeah.
But it does not add up.
Yeah.
And when we're researching all this stuff, people can fly drones pretty much anywhere now. So they're taking them to like more remote areas and they're filming downwards. And you're looking at the landscape that they're filming. You know, someone will post it online. Look at this. It's like, what does this look like to you? And it's like, that looks like a giant.
Yeah. And even thinking about that kind of technology and these ancient civilizations, I swear somewhere in like the Epic of Gilgamesh, it talks about something about like electricity, energy.
The more we're researching now, the more likely it is that these ancient civilizations very much had electricity.
Right.
It's wild.
Tesla studied ancient Egypt and the pyramids.
Yes. Those things were definitely some kind of power source. All these things, it's so fun to research at night. You can go on to YouTube, Rumble, X, whatever you want, and you can research a lot of these things, and it's just like your mind will be blown.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fascinating.
It's just like hearing the Bible stories you've never heard.
Yeah. It's piecing together the puzzle for you.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my gosh. And we wrote an article about a year ago we have that on X, and it's about the Anunnaki and the Devil's Tower. Like, Devil's Tower, we believe, was a tree for a show.
Yeah.
That thing, when you look at it, just look at it and just try to click on that common sense bulb. Click.
Yep.
It looks exactly like a tree stump.
It does.
Great chance that's a fossilized tree.
Yeah.
And they have those type, like Devil's Tower is one of many. Try to look up Giants in the Mountain and you'll see like when we were in Joshua Tree, some of those things, it's just like, that thing kind of looks like, that thing looks weird, like a giant kind of.
I know, the mountains.
Yeah,
and
some of them.
Yeah, there was so much detail.
So many rocks. They're just all like, what happened at some course in history? We'll all know at some point.
Yeah.
We're going to know, whether it be in this lifetime while we're still in our human bodies, or when we pass, everything will be answered for us.
Yeah.
And the beauty of it is that the evil that we see on this planet and these psychopaths and they will pay. And we'll know.
Yeah.
There's some really bad people on this planet. As we look into corruption and evil, what we're learning more and more about is the people that are Satanists and worshiping Lucifer and the devil and the sacrifices that they do. There's people on the planet that do that. A lot of people.
Yeah.
And it makes you become even more strong with God, the light, the good. And it solidifies your bond there even more. And it's a wild journey.
It is.
It's a wild, wild journey. So we get the Nicene Creed, and they also are going to decide there with all the bishops that were called to meet up with Constantine and decide what's going to be in the Bible. Let's pick the books. So they chose their books, and then there's the Apocrypha, the apocryphal writings. These are basically the biblical books that were written eons ago, before CE, the Common Era. The scripts that they found, that these are preserved knowledge in the 2nd to 3rd century BCE, before Common Era, or just BCE. And they decided they didn't want to keep these books in there, like the Book of Enoch, or the Book of Giants, or the Book of Jubilees, because it gives them too much information. They don't want people that awake. But there are divisions of Christianity that do have these books in it, like the Ethiopian Bible. When you look up the Book of Enoch, you're going to see the Ethiopian Bible. They do include the Book of Enoch. They have that in the Old Testament, where it should be. That part of the story is very important. They call it the Orthodox Tewahedo biblical canon. And there's two Oriental Orthodox churches that use it in the Ethiopian and Eritrean traditions. But the Catholic Church, the Protestant Church, most of the Christianity that we know in the Western world does not have the Book of Enoch. You know, I could go 5 years ago, talk to anyone that I grew up with. Hey, do you know about the Book of Enoch? Or didn't? No, what is that?
Right. Yeah, totally. When I grew up, you know, both my parents were raised Catholic, and They went to church, they were baptized, they did the whole thing. My dad went to boarding school, and luckily they kind of understood what the difference between, you know, the organized religion and, you know, what really the churches were all about. You know, the corruption, seeing it from the inside. So we basically learned the teachings of Jesus and prayed, and, you know, we bless us the Lord for these thy gifts before dinner every night, and just pretty much learned that what you said, Jesus died for our sins, and we pray to God to ask for help, and when we need help, when to help us be a good person, be a good neighbor, all of those things.
The important teachings.
Yes. Again, when I hear stories like David and Goliath, those were always allegories to me, and I'm excited to learn more because it's all very fascinating. And when we connect it with all these other topics we talk about, everything in my brain just kind of clicks.
And Goliath, we learned, is a giant that David killed with the stone and his slingshot. And so we hear about Goliath being a giant, but that's it. Okay, so we have Goliath, a giant,
mm-hmm.
who was double or triple the size of a normal man back then, or double. It'd be huge. It'd be a huge guy. But that's pretty much it. It's like, okay, so when we're learning about it, it's like, so David killed some big dude. Okay. But they leave out the other parts. The people who decided that these books are going to be in the Bible, they're just people. They're just humans.
I know.
They're just men who want the best way to control the masses, just like they do now.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the information we're going to give you, but we're not going to give you the rest.
Keep them confused.
Keep them confused. Keep them working, and don't give them free energy, because that's going to completely free them. But we know that that's on its way, and a lot of revelations happening there. So thousands of years had passed, and no one, humans, just your normal common peasants like us, wouldn't have known about these books. But in the 40s is when they were found. They're called the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Okay, yeah. I read it was like 1945.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's so recent.
Yeah. They found a bunch of them between 1947 and 1956. And they're considered to be the most significant archaeological finds of the 20th century, which they are.
More people need to talk about that.
It's not in your history books. Wasn't in the history books.
No.
And that we're teaching. And they were uncovered in areas of Israel, Palestine, those areas. They were discovered in a cave near present-day Qumran, which is on the northwestern shore of the Dead Sea. And they found many different preserved writings in there that are dating back to 200 to 300 years before Jesus. And present-day, this area is ruins, but as they started to excavate it, they found a whole city, basically, where these people lived. And these people are known as the Essenes, and they were a monastic community. It was mainly men, as they're doing their archaeological discoveries and finds and what they're finding. Majority of them, any remains, were men, but there were, you know, they found thousands of men, but they found, you know, 50 to 100 remains of women. So it was majority of men, and they were devoting their way of life to this knowledge and preserving it. And working, you know, being a spiritual form of people. And this is so fascinating. Not only did they preserve the beliefs, but they developed a worldview that rejected the rest of the Jewish people at that time. They separated themselves from the main group that they were with before. They had a dualistic view of the world, which they believed is sharply divided between good and evil, light and darkness. They were looking for an imminent divine judgment of the wicked, which in my mind, I'm like, these people sound awesome.
Mm-hmm.
There's good, there's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Let's fight the bad. Let's preserve the knowledge. And it is, when we look at it today, everything, as above, so below, there's good, there's bad.
The yin and the yang.
Yeah. And so that's where they discovered these books. So that's in the 40s. They're not teaching you and Catholic school about these things. They're not going to dive into the Book of Enoch because it's not part of their script. So we're just sitting there kind of confused. And as a kid, I always just had those really deep thoughts, like, how do I know God is real? How do I know I'm even really here right now? How do I know that this is even real?
Right. Infinity.
Exactly. Infinity. how do I know? Like, I want to go to heaven so bad.
Things just, you know, that's part of, I said that also because the Big Bang Theory you mentioned. All that stuff they expose you to, and it just to keep you confused.
Yeah.
Outside the loop.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I remember when you told me, like, the idea of infinity just, like, racked your brain.
Oh, yeah.
And it did mine, too. And the same thing with, like, how they presented God to me as a man. And I'm just hard to grasp, but you just try to picture it in your head as a kid and be like, okay, that's how it is?
Yeah. It's those questions that you want so badly to be answered in the time, and you could sit there for hours on end just kind of like trying to wrap your head around it. And this gives you, I feel like it gives you a lot more to that story. You know, they'll say you should pray and everyone should pray. But in my mind, like, you know, you have the rosary. Yeah, you can go pray the rosary a million times, but there's also other forms of prayer. You can just talk. You can just talk to God.
Yeah.
You can talk to about whatever. That's the conversations. You're having a conversation, and that's how I view it.
You can ask for message, a sign, and I've gotten them before.
Yeah.
You know, some people ask for that in animals and sometimes birds for me, and the messages are there if you're open to it.
Yeah, they are. Back in Omaha, you were praying.
Yeah.
Purple Orby.
Yeah, I know. Little friend.
If you haven't seen the trailer for our documentary,
yeah,
you should check it out. We have a wild footage that we caught of a purple orb showing up right in my parents' backyard. And it was just there flashing. And we caught it again here.
Yes, the other day.
On Melissa's phone. It was back.
It was so
it was crazy.
Weird.
And it was there for a while. For a while. Like, we were filming it for like 10 minutes.
I know.
It's crazy.
I know.
There's just so much because we're always wanting to film this stuff because we want people to see it. And so who is Enoch? Enoch was Adam's, you know, we have Adam and Eve. He was his great-great-great-great-great-grandson. And Enoch was Noah's great-grandfather. He was also the father of Methuselah, who was known as the longest living man. When you look back at biblical people, they lived hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And that was another one of those things that was fascinating to me as a kid. How do these people live so long? Oh, well, it was just a clerical error. You know, like they didn't, that's just, they judged time differently back then. I'm like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
They're not dumb. We go through seasons. Mm-hmm. Like these people, and that's, you know, kind of the definition they would give us in grade school.
Wow. Well, I never learned that. I think you brought it up to me when we were watching Lord of the Rings, because Aragorn's 87. And we were talking about what's the race that he comes from in Rings of Power?
He's a descendant of the Numenoreans, and he was a Dunedain ranger, which was like the only remaining of the Numenoreans. He was a Dunedain.
Okay, but yeah, they lived hundreds of years sometimes.
Yeah, they lived hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years because I believe they have a little bit different DNA.
Yes.
I think they have more godly DNA than just us, just our human DNA, and they could live so long. Enoch is also known to be one of the only two people who was ever taken into heaven without dying. Him and Elijah were the only two.
They were taken into heaven without dying.
He was taken into heaven by the angels to speak to God straight up.
Okay.
And given these revelations and what he wrote down and what he preserved, the story, and what was going on. He lived in a crazy time. Could you imagine living in this time?
No.
With what we get into, it's wild. And this is why they left it all out, because they don't want people to understand the full truth of what was going on prior to, you know, the flood and why the flood happened.
Right.
There's so many chapters that goes into this book. It's at least the book of Enoch alone is probably like 40 to 50 pages. So we are going to go through the different chapters of the book of Enoch and the book of Giants and select passages that we believe are the most relevant, as well as our interpretations of these passages and the chapters themselves. There's many different mysteries that are highlighted in these books. And the ones that stick out most are the angels, which are known as the Watchers, who rebelled against God and took a fancy to earthly women and impregnated them. And because of the difference in DNA sequences, when they gave birth, to the giants, which
That's so crazy.
Yeah. Which are known as the Nephilim, which you can find references to in the Old Testament. The Nephilim are brought up, not very often, but they have been brought up in the Old Testament. And this book basically describes who the Nephilim are, and they're giants. Yeah. And that was the offspring of fallen angels that rebelled against God, Lucifer, and all the other ones. There was way more than just who we know of as Lucifer and how they impregnated these women and gave birth to huge, ginormous, crazy, flesh-eating giants. It's wild. The books of the Book of Enoch is, there's five books. Book one is the Watchers. Book two is the Parables. Book three is the Book of Noah. Book four, the Kingdom of Heaven. Book five, the Epistle of Enoch. We're not going to be able to go through every single one of those books because this is a lot of information. But we're going to hit on some of it today from the first book. And I definitely want to talk about the Nephilim and the giants because that story is fascinating enough to get anyone researching this more.
Yeah, that'll draw you in.
The first book is called The Watchers. The Watchers are angels. Angels are watchers. The first chapter is called The Words of the Blessing of Enoch. The words of the blessing of Enoch, wherewith he blessed the elect and righteous who will be living in the days of tribulation, when all the wicked and godless are to be removed. And Enoch, a righteous man whose eyes were opened by God, took up his parable and said, I saw the vision of the Holy One in the heavens, which the angels showed me, and from them I heard everything, and from them I understood as I saw, but not for this generation, but for a remote one who is for to come. Concerning the elect, I said, and took up my parable concerning them, the Holy Great One will come forth from his dwelling, and the eternal God will tread upon the earth, even on Mount Sinai, and will appear in the strength of his might from the heaven of heavens. And all shall be smitten with fear, and the watchers shall quake, and great fear and trembling shall seize them unto the ends of the earth. And the high mountains shall be shaken, and the high hills shall be made low, and shall melt like wax before the flame. And the earth shall be wholly rent in sunder, and all that is upon the earth shall perish. And there shall be judgment upon all. But with the righteous he will make peace, and will protect the elect. And mercy shall be upon them, and they shall all belong to God, and they shall be prospered, and they shall be blessed, and he will help them all, and light shall appear unto them, and he will make peace with them. And behold, he cometh with 10,000s of his holy ones, to execute judgment upon all, and to destroy all the ungodly, and to convict all flesh of all the works of their ungodliness, which they have ungodly committed, and of all the hard things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. That is the first chapter, The Works of the Blessing of Enoch. So it sounds kind of like it's a revelation of what is going to come. It's going to be judgment upon people who are wicked and bad when that time comes, and that there's going to be, you know, with God and the angels. Yeah. But if you're good, you'll be okay. You'll be with God.
Right.
You'll prosper.
Mm-hmm.
If you're ungodly, if you're wicked, which we know there's a lot of that in the world.
Yeah.
You should probably be pretty scared.
Mm-hmm. It talks about the light shall appear. I want to know what you think of that.
Hope. That means hope, in my opinion. And that's what the Bible is. In the New Testament is hope. And that's what we're doing every day.
Yeah.
Is hope.
Right.
Because you can see the world for what it is and what goes on and the corruption and the evil and the wicked.
Mm-hmm.
And you're one person, but you do have a lot of power. And you do what you can, but you have hope that the light is coming. I believe the light is coming.
I believe the same. I just kind of keep that with me all the time. Sometimes I forget it on my bad days, but that's always been a part of me. Looking for the silver linings and things.
Yes, for sure. over the past year finding the silver lining in a lot of different things, because a lot of craziness can happen, and that's just our lives. But on a personal level, doing what you can to bring as much light into the world as you can. All the good people of Earth, that's really your mission here. Mm-hmm. That's our mission. Everyone's mission is to bring as much light into the world as you can.
Yeah.
It's never from birth to bring darkness into the world. You know, it goes back, like, there is the good and the light. Then I think of the darkness or the bad, and it just, like, pisses me off. It makes me angry. Yeah. And that's one of the things, like, in the Bible, is, like, don't hate.
Anger is part of it. Anger is part of the process.
Just like what we're talking about, the light. So having that hope that it's all part of the plan.
Yeah. And the mountains will shake. And do you think it's going to be a time where there's just a big shift on the planet?
There could be a magnetic pole shift. I've read a lot about the magnetic pole shift and how our planet goes through those phases. And that's coming, you know, the scientific community and researching that's important. Then you weigh that with the other side, which is we were created and that our Earth was created and that there's a plan. So then there's that other side, magnetic pole shifts, or is that some other kind of big event that's being carried out by entities and beings not of our dimension, consciousness, and there are different level of power.
Yeah.
So that's fascinating because I feel like that's being put out there. Magnetic pole shift, but then there's the narrative of the human-induced climate change thing, even though there's very well could be a magnetic pole shift coming, which would be detrimental for billions and billions of people.
Yeah.
If you don't know what that is, it's where literally the poles shift.
Which is why those, you know, they keep finding the Dead Sea Scrolls. They're going underwater and seeing the ancient cities underwater, just like underground.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, things have shifted around on this planet a lot, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you can do a quick Google search and find the cities that they found underwater, all the ruins. And how long ago was that? And what was it? What did it look like before? Wow. Look at the ancient temples that were built that are 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years old with pristine chiseling and everything. It's like,
yes,
there's no way some of those things were just built hand by hand. It's like that was built with a diamond cut laser beam machine. Please.
Yeah.
Like some things they find in India.
Yes.
Some of the archaeological sites or Egypt.
Egypt. Yeah.
There's no way.
No,
there's no way. And then when you look at the pyramids, there's no humanly way possible, the way that they're presenting it, that they pushed it there over a bunch of sticks, logs to push it, and then there's no
And then they way. Just built it all the way up to the tippy top. No.
Don't believe it.
I don't either.
But now, get this, look up Google search. This is a whistleblower from the CIA who remote viewed Mars a million years ago and that there were giants on Mars. And that's who built the pyramids.
Yeah, why is that coming out now?
It's just another one of those. It's just like, there's so much different stuff that's pushed out there. So you got to just use your own intuition and be like, okay, the giants on Mars, a million years, you remote viewed a million years ago, you're telling me. It's one of those things where, like, when I saw that one, I'm like, I don't know if I'm buying this one that much.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that's a pretty far out one.
It's far out.
It is far out. So that's chapter one. Chapter two is the creation. Observe ye everything that takes place in the heaven, how they do not change their orbits, and the luminaries which are in the heaven. And luminaries are stars. They're what you see in the sky. Those are luminaries. How they all rise and set in order, each in its season, and transgress not against their appointed order. Behold ye the earth, and give heed to the things which take place upon it from first to last, how steadfast they are, how none of the things upon earth change, but all the works of God appear to you. Behold the summer and the winter, how the whole earth is filled with water, and clouds and dew and rain lie upon it. Observe and see how in the winter all the trees seem as though they had withered and shed all their leaves, except 14 trees, which do not lose their foliage, but retain the old foliage from 2 to 3 years till the new one comes. And again, observe ye the days of summer, and how the sun is above the earth over against it. And you seek shade and shelter by reason of the heat of the sun, and the earth also burns with growing heat. And so you cannot tread on the earth or on rock by reason of its heat. Observe ye how the trees cover themselves with green leaves and bear fruit. Wherefore, give ye heed and know with regard to all his works, and recognize how he that liveth forever hath made them so. And all his works go upon thus from year to year forever. And all the tasks which they accomplish for him and their tasks change not. And behold how the sea and the rivers in like manner accomplish and change not their tasks from his commandments. But ye have not been steadfast, nor done the commandments of the Lord. But ye have turned away and spoken proud and hard words with your impure mouths against his greatness. And ye hard-hearted, ye shall find no peace. Therefore shall ye execrate your days, and the years of your life shall perish, and the years of your destruction shall be multiplied an eternal abomination. In those days ye shall make your names an eternal abomination unto all the righteous, and by you shall all who curse curse. All the sinners and godless shall imprecate by you, and for you the godless there shall be a curse, and all the righteous shall rejoice, and there shall be forgiveness of sins, and every mercy and peace forbearance. There shall be salvation unto them, a goodly light. And for all you sinners there shall be no salvation, but on you all shall abide the curse of the beast. The curse of the beast. There shall be no salvation, but on you all shall abide the curse of the beast. But for the elect there shall be light and joy and peace, and they shall inherit the earth. And then there shall be bestowed upon the elect wisdom, and they shall all live and never again sin either through ungodliness or through pride. But they who are wise shall be humble, and they shall not again transgress, nor shall they sin in all the days of their life, nor shall they die of anger or wrath, but they shall complete the number of the days of their life, and their lives shall be increased in peace, and the years of their joy shall be multiplied in eternal gladness and peace all the days of their life.
That sounds familiar.
It's deep. Mm-hmm. What does it sound familiar?
We were just talking about see the light in everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In nature, with your family, animals, and enjoy God's earth and everything that you were given. Be a good person.
Yeah.
Like those things that were taught. The good things, the Jesus.
And it sounds like the good shall inherit the earth. And that's what we want.
Yes.
The good shall inherit the earth. And
like good's going to win in the end, which is what we believe.
Yes.
It is a part of our hope, but that's a belief.
Yes. And we are very close to having the keys to the good being able to inherit the earth, because I believe that the majority of humans have good in their heart. I do yeah. not believe the majority are dark. I believe no. that there's a lot of wicked, evil
darkness.
People out there. But the majority is the good.
Yeah.
And we are very close to being able to have that freedom, that peace, and to live in eternal greatness for real. I think we're really close to that. And one of the most important things in how we can get there for real is with the technologies that are hoarded by the evil, the darkness, mm-hmm. because their greed is so strong, and their anger and their wrath, and they go to war. We're talking about the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
And the intelligence agencies, they want war, they want fighting, they want to pit everybody against each other. And that's evil. That is the devil. That's the devil controlling them. And they hoard that amazing technology that the GOAT, Nikola Tesla, was able to rediscover for us, and it was hoarded away, the zero-point energy.
Yeah.
And just the other day, the letter written to Sean Ryan on the Sean Ryan podcast, he's saying the UFOs that they're seeing, the drones, the UFOs are non-gravitic propulsion devices.
Yeah.
Meaning anti-gravity. Meaning yep. they're harnessed by, they have endless supplies of energy. They're powered on zero point energy. They can zippity-doo-dah all over the place. They have that tech.
They've had it.
They've had it forever. And apparently there's this guy's saying, we have it. China has it. Well, humanity wants it. We want it.
There's the cabal at the top that has it.
Yes. For any new viewers, please go back and check out. We have two parts on that. And that is zero point energy. And it's, you could power anything on it. Your home, your car, anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the means to have your own energy, you have complete freedom. And this chapter two, it also sounds like the judgment. What will be the judgment?
Yeah.
Here's the earth that was created, and the bad will perish along with the demons that have controlled them. And there will be eternal greatness.
Yeah.
And that's the world that we want. That's the world we want for everyone's kids, for your families, for peace and happiness and abundance. And it's a cool chapter. Chapter 3, The Fallen Angels. And it came to pass when the children of men had multiplied, that in those days were born unto them beautiful and comely daughters. And the angels, the children of the heaven, saw and lusted after them, and said to one another, come, let us choose us wives from among the children of men, and beget us children. And Samjaza, who was their leader, said unto them, I fear ye will not indeed agree to this deed, and I alone shall have to pay the penalty of a great sin. And they all answered him and said, let us all swear an oath, and all bind ourselves by mutual imprecations not to abandon this plan, but to do this thing. Then swear they all together, and bound themselves by mutual imprecations upon it. And they were in all 200, who descended in the days of Jared on the summit of Mount Hermon. And they called it Mount Hermon, because they had sworn and bound themselves by mutual imprecations upon it. And these are the names of their leaders: Samlazaz, their leader, Arak Labah, Ramael, Kokablel, Tamlel, Ramlel, Danel, Ezekiel, Barakijal, Asael, Armaros, Batarel, Ananel, Zakalel, Samsapil, Zatarel, Turel, Jamjael, Sariel. These are their chiefs of tens. And all the others together with them took unto themselves wives, and each chose for himself one. And they began to go in unto them, and to defile themselves with them. And they taught them charms and enchantments, and the cutting of roots, and made them acquainted with plants. And they became pregnant, and they bare great giants, whose height was 3,000 ells, who consumed all the acquisitions of men. And when men could no longer sustain them, the giants turned against them and devoured mankind. And they began to sin against birds and beasts and reptiles and fish, and to devour one another's flesh and drink the blood. Then the earth laid accusation against the lawless ones, and Azazel taught men to make swords and knives and shields and breastplates, and made known to them the metals of the earth and the art of working them, and bracelets and ornaments, and the use of antimony, and the beautifying of the eyelids, and all kinds of costly stones, and all coloring tinctures. And there arose much godlessness, and they committed fornication, and they were led astray, and became corrupt in all their ways. Samjaza taught enchantments and root cuttings, Armaros the resolving of enchantments, Barakijal taught astrology, Kokabel the constellations, Ezekiel the knowledge of the clouds, Arakiel the signs of the earth, Shamsael the signs of the sun, and Sariel the course of the moon. And as men perished, they cried, and their cry went up to heaven. So that gives a lot more information from what we were told. It shows how giants were made. It explains Goliath. And I believe Goliath would have been a lesser of the giants. It would have been way down the line, the offspring of one of the first giants, because Goliath wasn't as big as these original ones. But that DNA lived on, and so Goliath probably had human, but mixed with giant or Nephilim DNA. These giants are the Nephilim, and essentially these angels who rebelled, going against what their orders were and the right thing, and they impregnated these women, creating giants. Hey, thanks for tuning into this episode. If you are enjoying our show and support the It Can't Be a Joke mission, please consider leaving us a review on your streaming platform, following us on X, YouTube, Instagram, and Rumble, and showing your support by purchasing one of the many items we have for sale on our merch shop, which can be found in our link tree on our social media sites.
We're always looking to work with like-minded individuals, so if you're interested in working together or sponsorship opportunities, shoot us a message or email. Thanks again for all of your support.
Now, back to the episode.
And the women were what size then? Our size?
To my knowledge, just normal humans.
Okay.
Just like us.
And whatever the DNA mix was, it just created giants. And then as years and thousands of years passed, they just...
The creator would have set up what I think. The DNA, like if they mixed, it's going to be known that you fornicated or impregnated a human, because the way I've created everything is it's going to show, because there's going to be a giant human walking around. And that's the only way that that happens is if this happens. You impregnate a human.
Yeah.
Which you're not supposed to do. You are on a totally different level than them. Yeah. And then as I'm reading more in the Book of Giants, one of the other books, which correlates directly with the Book of Enoch, that they were apparently... In the Book of Giants, it talks about impregnation of other animals and other stuff, too, and creating these other weird beasts. And I'm like,
ew.
Weird.
That is so weird.
It's super weird. And so Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, Uriel, the good angels that we know of, the archangels, there's going to be a war fought between them because God's like, this is not right. Go make it right. And he sends his best angels, and there's a war on Earth. And then there's going to be a huge flood, just like we talked about. It's going to cover the whole world. And at one point, when the giants will be taken out by the flood, but their spirits lived on, those spirits are what the demons are.
Really?
On our earth.
They're just like interdimensional.
Yeah.
Those spirits.
We can't see them, but they can manipulate and haunt people.
Yeah.
I think that's what one of the next chapters talks about.
That's explaining that just more of like how these giants came about and lived among different species and humans. And some of the images I've seen, they're like a little bit bigger. And then some of them are taller than our trees, which explains why trees were so tall.
Yeah. And I believe it's the Book of Giants. They're talking about how the children of Cain and Abel, the children of Cain, worshipped the giants, and they would give them offerings. And a lot of the people, to keep the giants happy, because they're giants, they're gonna mess you up, would give them offerings, and you know, like as much as they could to not die by the giants. And when they ran out of resources, the giants turned on them and started killing the humans. So now imagine the giants running around just slaughtering the humans, eating them, eating the humans, like terrifying stuff.
Wow.
Oh my God. Then the giants would start eating themselves, not like can't like eating their own body, but they would eat the other giants. It says they got bloodthirsty in the taste of flesh and blood.
Yeah, that's creepy.
It's super creepy.
And so that is still here, and that would explain some of that dark underground corruption.
Yeah, that evil.
People think it's myth, you know, it's an old myth. And
that's what they say about it all.
I know. It's like, well, when did it stop? It just like changed. They just rebranded.
They say all the ancient mythology in humanity's past, they were just trying to figure out ways to try to make a reason with how we got here, and they made it up. I do not believe that for one moment, that all the ancient mythology and history from back then was just them trying to make something up. There's reasons behind it. We were learning about Dogon the other day, remember?
Oh, yeah, that god with the fish head.
The fish head, Dogon. Look up, for our listeners, look up Dogon, fish god. And a lot of people in the past, it was like a human fish god. And he was one of the Anunnaki. another big topic I want to dive into, because the fallen, the Nephilim, I believe, are the Anunnaki.
Wow, that's crazy.
The Nephilim, from what we're researching, are the Anunnaki.
Yeah.
So the Babylonians, the Tower of Babel, remember, was destroyed. They worshipped the Anunnaki. If you go back and look at the ancient Anunnaki, the images of the Anunnaki people, and then there's the Dogon one, the fish guy.
Yeah.
And he wears a fish head, and then he's got like a human body and head, and then a fish bottom, but he can then walk too. He's got some feet coming out of that fish body.
It's like a mermaid species.
Yes. And then, you know, there's centaurs and stuff like that. And it's like, what? But so Dogon wore the fish on his head, and it looks identical to the Pope's hat.
Yeah.
And so we are watching that documentary on Dogon and the Pope.
Yes.
The Dogon guy is actually just, you know, controlling. It was so weird with that picture with the Dogon behind the Pope, like controlling him. Like, and so the Pope's wearing that hat, which is spitting image to an Anunnaki god that the Pope is paying homage to Dogon, that god. But none of us know it because we don't know their stupid symbolism, but it's coming out. People need to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, imagine the vaults of the Vatican and the amount of information and knowledge. Everything. They have everything down there.
And how come if, let's say, the hats that they wear, the goofy-ass hats that they wear, symbolize something, why wouldn't you learn about that in Catholic school?
No one asks.
Yeah.
Or if they do ask, I mean, there's going to be a different description, you know, that the internet will give you or that they'll tell you. Let's look it up. The Pope's hat. The papal tiara, a crown worn by the popes of the 8th century to the 20th century. The mitre. Yeah, here it is. What is the Pope's hat called? The papal tire.
People just assume it's a crown.
Yeah, the papal tire is a crown. Oh, here it is. It's called the mitre pope hat. This is a hat many people imagine when they see a pope that reminds them of the pope. In essence, that is simply a larger hat. It should be noted that this hat should be considered a ceremonial head that is not worn by the Pope but other clergy. It has it is decorated now with a lot of priceless ornaments and diamonds, of course, because they are so greedy.
Yeah.
It is called this due to the fact there are various precious stones and gold. Either way. So there's the connections between the Anunnaki and the Nephilim is fascinating, because the ancient Babylonians, they did worship the Anunnaki gods, and we know in the Bible the destruction of the Tower of Babel and the Babylonian really empire civilization. It would make sense if they were being run by the fallen angels, the Watchers, the fallen angels, and potentially the Nephilim. And they have godly powers because they have more power, different DNA.
Yeah.
They have God, half God DNA, pretty much. We have God DNA, but they are different level.
Yeah.
It's very fascinating. That is the falling of the Watchers, the rebellion. It wasn't just Lucifer who rebelled against God. It was many angels, legions of angels who got corrupted. But God wasn't going to play that game. He's going to send his loyal archangels. That's what chapter 4 is about, the intercession of angels. And then Michael, Uriel, Raphael, and Gabriel looked down from heaven and saw much blood being shed upon earth, and all lawlessness being wrought upon the earth. And they said to one another, "The earth made without inhabitant cries the voice of the cryings up to the gates of heaven. And now to you, the holy ones of heaven, the souls of men make their suit, saying, Bring our cause before the Most High." And they said to the Lord of the ages, "Lord of lords, God of gods, King of kings, and God of the ages, the throne of thy glory standeth unto all the generations of the ages, and thy name holy and glorious and blessed unto all the ages. Thou hast made all things, in power over all things hast thou, and all things are naked and open in thy sight. Thou seest all things, and nothing can hide itself from thee. Thou seest what Azazel hath done, who hath thought all unrighteousness on earth, and revealed the eternal secrets which were in heaven. which men were striving to learn, and Sam Lazaz, to whom thou hast given authority to bear rule over his associates. And they have gone to the daughters of men upon the earth, and have slept with the women, and have defiled themselves, and revealed to them all kinds of sins. And the women have borne giants, and the whole earth has thereby been filled with blood and unrighteousness. And now behold, the souls of those who have died are crying out, making their suit to the gates of heaven, and their lamentations have ascended and cannot cease because of the lawless deeds which are wrought on the earth. And thou knowest all things before they come to pass, and thou seest these things, and thou dost suffer them. And thou dost not say to us what we are to do to them in regard to these. Then said the Most High, the Holy and Great One spake, and sent Uriel to the son of Lamech, and said to him, Go to Noah, and tell him in my name, hide thyself, and reveal to him the end that is approaching, and the whole earth will be destroyed, and a deluge is about to come upon the whole earth, and will destroy all that is on it. And now instruct him that he may escape and his seed may be preserved for all the generations of the world. And again, the Lord said to Raphael, Bind Azazel hand and foot and cast him into the darkness and make an opening in the desert, which is in Dudael, and cast him therein and place upon him rough and jagged rocks and cover him with darkness and let him abide there forever. And cover his face that he may not see light. And on the day of the great judgment he shall be cast into the fire, and heal the earth which the angels have corrupted, and proclaim the healing of the earth, and they may heal the plague, and that all children of men may not perish through all the secret things that the watchers have disclosed and have taught their sons. And the whole earth has been corrupted through the works that were taught by Azazel. To him ascribe all sin, and to Gabriel, said the Lord, proceed against the bastards and the reprobates, and against the children of fornication, and destroy the children of the watchers from amongst men. Send them one against the other, that they may destroy each other in battle. For length of days shall they not have, and no request that they make of thee shall be granted unto the fathers of their behalf. For they hope to live an eternal life, and that each one of them will live 500 years. And the Lord said unto Michael, Go bind Sam Lazaz and his associates, who have united themselves with women, so as to have defiled themselves with them, and all their uncleanness and their sons have slain one another, and they have seen the destruction of their beloved ones. Bind them fast for 70 generations in the valleys of the earth, till the day of their judgment and their consummation, till the judgment that is forever and ever is consummated. In those days they shall be led off to the abyss of fire, and to the torment and the prison in which they shall be confined forever. And whosoever shall be condemned and destroyed will from thenceforth be bound together, and them to the end for all generations, and destroy all the spirits of the reprobate and the children of the watchers, because they have wronged mankind. Destroy all wrong from the face of the earth, and let every evil work come to an end, and let the plant of righteousness and truth appear, and it shall prove a blessing. The works of the righteousness and truth shall be planted in truth and joy forevermore. And then shall the righteous escape, and shall live till they beget thousands of children, and all the days of their youth and their old age shall be complete in peace. And then shall the whole earth be tilled in righteousness, and shall all be planted with trees, and be full of blessing, and all desirable trees be planted on it.
In the beginning of the reading, when it says, you know, things are all open and naked and in sight, it sounds like things that were revealed to Adam and Eve. Thou hast made all things, and power over all things hast thou, and all things are naked and open in thy sight, and thou seest all things, and nothing can hide itself from thee. Does that mean, you know, you can't hide yourself from God?
So kind of like Adam and Eve, when they're learning about, they realize that they're naked,
mm-hmm.
a little similar.
Yeah.
And the learning of these different things that... You know, like Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, when they're tempted by the devil and Satan, and they fall for the trap. They're deceived, they're fooled, they're manipulated.
Yeah.
I think they can be correlated back there.
Hmm.
The intercession of the angels, the war, the fight between them, and basically punishing them for doing what they weren't supposed to be, and for corrupting the whole planet, the corruption of everything.
Yeah, it sounds like corruption, chaos.
Descending down, we have Michael, the archangels, Michael, Uriel, Raphael, Gabriel, to go after the Watchers, the fallen bad angels, punish them, basically throw them down into hell, trying to make right. But what's also really interesting in that is the calling out to Noah.
Yeah.
Who's his grandson, to prepare basically the ark, because
they're anticipating the flood.
The whole place is about to be flooded.
Yeah.
The wicked and the corrupt are about to be taken out. That's just a couple chapters of a very large work. So following chapter 4 is chapter 5, the Book of the Words of Righteousness. Chapter 6, Taken by Angels. Chapter 7, The Holy Angels. And that's book 1, and there's 5 total books in the Book of Enoch. So it is in depth. There's so much information, and it's all brand new information for most people that weren't taught this growing up. So if you want a really in-depth read that goes very deep and that has a lot of information, the Book of Enoch is the no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
But also looking into the Book of Giants, which was discovered around the same time.
Okay, that's new. I guess I didn't realize there was a Book of Giants.
It's straight up called the Book of Giants.
Cool.
It was found in the Dead Sea Scrolls as well at Qumran, same location, same time frame that these were written in to preserve the knowledge with the Essenes. And the Book of Giants, what I was able to find online, there's a whole PDF of it, and it breaks it out in a very easy way to read. It gives you the whole story pretty quick.
So the Book of Giants.
So it starts out with the Watchers and how they were grieving over the sins of mankind. And remember, the Watchers are the angels, and how they feel bad for mankind, and they petition God to let them descend to earth to teach some of the men righteousness and rebuke them, and that God had granted them this petition. So they were asking for God's approval to go teach men some righteousness and to rebuke them. And rebuke basically means to reprimand or to criticize, to teach, to, you know, show men, here's what you're doing wrong, and we're going to criticize you for it and teach you.
Yeah.
That's what they were seeking from God. And God said, yes, go do that. So a lot of angels were given the approval to go down. And that's when things literally go down. So they descend down to earth, and they begin to teach men righteousness and justice. And Enoch is chosen by the Watchers to serve as the mediator between men, the angels, and God. And around this time, the Book of Giants talks about how the daughters of men start to lust after the attractive Watchers or angels, and they seduce them. So Azazel, with Shem-Hazah's help, they instigate the fall of over 200 Watchers or angels and their followers. Okay. And they fall from their glorious nature, and they become bound to the fleshy, like human bodies, as a consequence of joining sexually with the women. And we're going to find out even more things that they were joining sexually with, which is so weird.
Oof, yeah.
And this is around the time after they had started to mate with the human women that they start to reveal to them the heavenly and earthly secrets. The angels, the fallen angels, they start to have families with the humans. And by doing this, they give birth to the giants. And the giants are plagued with greed and corruption. That's one of their biggest plagues. But you're going to learn that the giants, they're not all of them are just full of evil. They have thoughts and emotions, and they're confused, and they want to know their purpose.
Because they're the hybrid.
They're a hybrid. Yes.
Okay.
Human/angel.
Right.
And they're huge. And they're confused as to their purpose.
Mm.
Remember, Cain and the children of Cain were giving offerings to them, which, yeah, that's basically what happens.
So they started worshiping the giants.
Yeah, the children of Cain. I just wanted to reiterate that they had emotions, but they started to get like bloodthirsty, and they get corrupted, and they have emotions in the sense that as time goes on, they're trying to question, why are they there? What is their purpose? They're having dreams and they're having these weird revelations in their dreams. It's really crazy because it talks about dragons back then, and the giants would kill the dragons. And because of that, the children of Cain worshipped the giants and paid homage to them and gave them grain and vegetables and whatever they had to, you know, these are our offerings to them for protecting us from the dragons.
Okay.
I've read that the dragons, if we think about it, maybe it wasn't flying around dragons, which it very well could have been. We don't know. We weren't back then, but it could have been like T-Rexes and dinosaurs, and those were the dragons.
Yeah.
Imagine being a human back then. I mean, you have giant T-Rexes running around. That'd be terrifying, and the T-Rexes would destroy you.
Of course.
Unless you had like 100 men and you're all stabbing it with a spear, then you might have a chance.
Yeah.
The giants at that time could go toe-to-toe with a T-Rex.
Interesting.
Or if there were flying around huge dragons, then, and the giants were humongoid and just huge,
yeah,
then they could maybe take on a dragon because the giants were huge.
Did that give them purpose?
I think so. And, and the children of Cain wanted to make sure that they weren't on the wrong side of the giants. So they were giving sacrifices and they were worshiping them. It talks about their height. They mentioned in the Book of Enoch that the giant's height was 3,000 ells. One ell is almost 4 feet, 3.75 feet. So if they were
10,000 feet tall?
3,000 ells, yeah, 9,000 feet tall. This is what it's saying in the Book of Enoch. Those are some big, big bad boys.
Mm-hmm.
That's humongous. Like, that's insanity.
What was the devil's?
Devil's Tower.
The Devil's Tower. Yeah, that thing is a huge tree. It's hard for you to imagine that. But archaeologists have come out and said they think it's a tree.
Yeah.
And that makes sense.
Looks exactly like one.
Well, when you think about why were trees that big and how and when.
Yeah.
Probably back during the time of the giants. And
yeah, everything was bigger back then. It's interesting if you're trying to piece together all the what they say in the script, that is a huge, huge, huge person walking around. So the children of Cain wanted to have them in their good graces because the giants would protect them from the dragons. But as their offerings weren't enough anymore, the vegetables and the grain, it wasn't enough for the giants. So the giants turned on them and they start to eat the children of Cain. The giants start to also eat each other and the humans, and they become bloodthirsty. It mentions that the giants continued the sinful practices of their fathers, who were the watchers, the fallen angels, by taking up multiple wives and mating also with animals. So the giants would mate not only with humans, but with animals. And the offspring were also more Nephilim and Eliod is what they're called. And they were the children of the Nephilim, the Eliod. And I think if there's these giant creatures, you know, the giants, if they were mating with an animal, maybe that's where we get centaurs. Maybe that's where we get fish.
Mermaids.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you got the human fish.
Yeah.
That would make sense. Maybe that's where they came from. And the
so crazy.
Anunnaki worshiping Dogon, the fish god guy, was probably the Nephilim.
Okay.
And it's just, it's
that's wild.
It is. God obviously is not viewing this as something good that's happening. He's saying, what the heck is going on? In his mind, this is unacceptable. So he sends Enoch to warn the watchers about their impending judgment for corrupting the land and for breaking all the laws and for doing this messed up stuff, and that there's going to be their impending doom. Enoch is the messenger sent. So Enoch is sent by the good watchers, the good angels. So we're talking Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, or Uriel, to criticize, rebuke the fallen watchers and declare to them their doom. As they hear this, the watchers weep and beg Enoch to ask God for forgiveness and to restore them to their former glory so them and their sons can have eternal life. Enoch agrees to tell God, and Enoch is told to tell them that they were not given permission to have sex, and what their punishment is because of it is a miserable doom and fate of the offspring of the fallen watchers. So the Nephilim, and the Nephilim, the giants, are going to become evil spirits on this land after they perish, and they will not have eternal life, but that their years will be no more than 500. They will perish, they will die, and that their spirit will live on, and that they're going to be evil spirits on this world. And the fallen watchers and giants' sons furiously then, upon receiving this news, the fallen angels and giants are throwing rocks at Enoch, who is shielded by the good angels and brought back up to heaven to safety. Soon after this, war breaks out amongst the giants. They start to just go crazy. Civil war essentially breaks out amongst the giants. And one of the giants kidnaps the wives of a giant named Hobabesh. And Gilgamesh starts to play a role here. Gilgamesh, one of the giants. And at this point, the giants maybe aren't 10,000 feet tall. They may be way smaller, because after the genetic sequencing of this, years and years and generations and hundreds of years go by, they're probably losing height. But a giant could maybe still be 50 feet tall or 30 feet tall rather than 10,000. Maybe that was just the first ones and they were ginormously huge. But Gilgamesh plays a role here. Who knows? The giants, they could still be huge. Like, I'm imagining, like, these giants are, like, 500 feet tall at this point.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not going into outer space.
Same, to, yeah. But maybe that's what I'm picturing.
Maybe they're around 500 feet. But Gilgamesh plays a role here, and he prevents the giant Oya from killing Mahawe. So, good on you, Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh playing a good role. Like I said earlier, it seems that the giants, the sins of their ancestors maybe aren't still as stuck with them. They're rational, they think, and they're trying to figure out their true purpose. And during this time, they just seem confused, lost, and they're seeking their own truths. Gilgamesh has a prophetic dream, which he interprets as the giants are not being punished at this time. He has a dream that basically he tells the other giants and they rejoice, yet they remain skeptical because of the dream's credibility. So he has a prophetic dream that everything's going to be okay. Subsequently, Oya and Haya have their own dreams, further adding to the uncertainty of the situation. And the giants are trying to figure out and interpret the dreams even more, but none of them can tell the meaning. So they're just these confused, huge giants trying to figure out their purpose. And very soon during this time, Mahawe goes to Enoch to find their fate, and Enoch gives them two tablets. One for Shimhaza and the Watchers, so one of the tablets going to the fallen angels, and the other tablet is going to the giants. After the first tablet was read, the giants were aware of their impending doom, is what was on this tablet. The first tablet was given to the giants, stating their impending doom, and they sadly accepted what fate had in store for them. Then they proceeded to have the second tablet read in order to gain more clarity of what lies ahead. And the second tablet was for the fallen angels. So Enoch warns Shimhaza and the other fallen angels that they will be bound, which means bound to the earth, bound in hell. However, he encourages the giants to turn to prayer and reform their ways as they still have a chance for repentance. So the fallen angels, the watchers, they're doomed. They're going to hell. They're going to be bound. And the giants have a chance for repentance. So the giants do repent and the watchers are, they're going to hell for their crazy, hideous crimes. Crazy, hideous crimes on all fronts here from the giants and the watchers throughout history from what we're seeing in these works. Shimhaza, the fallen angel, advises his children, Oya and Haya, because the giants are their children, to change their lifestyles for the purpose of receiving mercy. In response, Oya and Haya follow their father's words and try to convince the giants to reform by using wise sayings, demonstrating that real success comes from within. So they're being pretty philosophical here. And the giants endeavor to make amends for their wrongdoings. Soon after, God instructs Enoch to inform the watchers that they will all be confined in an abyss of torment within a period of 120 years as recompense for their misdeeds, and their sons will be completely eradicated from the face of the earth. Soon after, Noah commences constructing the ark. They're going to be eradicated by the flood. So they have to prepare. It's about to go down. And at this time, though, Azazel was the only watcher that had been confined or restrained. Azazel was bound. Shimhaza, the other fallen angel, wasn't bound yet, but Azazel was. So the giants, they were saddened by the fact that Azazel had been bound and chained down in hell. And they bragged about how they and the watchers weren't bound nor destroyed. In response to the giants' actions, the bragging, the boasting, Gabriel the archangel was sent to encourage a civil war among them and their descendants. They soon began killing each other, and the watchers helplessly witnessed the destruction of their kin. So the giants have another war. They're killing each other. When the conflict of the giants was over, only a few were spared. And during this war, the watchers, the fallen angels, who these were their kids, they had to onlook in grief and sadness as they watched their kids kill each other. Only a few giants remained, and the angels then banished all of the defeated watchers to a dark and grim prison. After this, the archangels, Michael, Gabriel, they had banished all the remaining watchers after they were defeated to a dark and grim prison as punishment. And that is what we would know of as hell. And at the same time, this is when Noah is preparing the ark. And a flood arose that took the lives of many of the giants and pretty much all the creatures of earth that were on land. But some of the giants did manage to escape and survived the deluge. To set things right, God had sent Leviathan. You may have heard of Leviathan before, to get rid of all of the threat caused by the giants and their descendants who managed to survive. Oya, after successfully confronting the Leviathan, the giant killed the dragon, the sea monster dragon Leviathan, and is punished by God's messenger Raphael. From then on, to cleanse the earth fully of the evil forces, Oya is sent to a dark prison in order to be punished, and the fallen watchers are also bound in there. In hell is what I'm assuming these prisons are, and these being bound underground in this grim place. So at this time, we have the watchers who are bound, and also Oya, who had fought off the dragon. But after the flood, the giants remained on earth as spirits without physical bodies. And that is what we may know of as the demons or the spirits that inherit this earth that are evil. There's a lot for interpretation, but that is what the message was to them, that you're going to live for 500 years. And after that, your soul, your spirit is going to live on, but you're going to be stuck on this earth and you're going to be evil spirits. And then an angel was sent to them and gave the fallen a code of conduct to abide by in order to avoid punishment from the watchers, any further punishment. This is what led to the existence of the Nephilim and the spirits, demons, and the what some cultures call the djinn on earth after the great flood.
That's the Book of Giants.
That's the Book of Giants.
So the evil is still here operating and underground in different dimensions.
If we're drawing the parallels, it does very much seem like that.
It does.
That the evil on the world, and you know, you have these crazy satanic people making crazy satanic sacrifices that are human.
When they were sacrificing the vegetables and grains, where does the sacrifice children, is that what stories?
Oh, in the Old Testament. The bull, remember the golden calf, and they're worshiping the golden calf, and they're giving offerings, and they're going back to the old ways. And that's when Moses was like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Why are you worshiping? It's got the bull, the horns, just like the goat, just like Taurus.
Yeah, Taurus.
That was the age.
Mm-hmm.
And the events of the Book of Giants could have gone on over 5, 10, 15,000 years.
And the archangel came down and said, I'm bounding, your soul will live on, but you're still stuck here.
Oh yeah, that giant was bound down there. Whereas the giants that were killed by the flood after the deluge, the deluge came through.
Yeah.
Their spirits, if they would have drowned, would have inherited the earth as just evil spirits.
Okay.
It's just so interesting to try to wrap your brain around the whole thing.
Those myths have been carried on forever. Even like in classical music, they're inspired by the Loch Ness. There's a piece from the 16th century called The Devil's Trill, and it's about the devil coming down to this musician who's asleep and sells his soul to be the best violin player. Like, those stories are so old. And then when I hear these stories, I'm like, that seems very probable. Probably happened.
I think some real crazy stuff happened in our history that there are a select few that hoard all the knowledge. That's why shows like Ancient Apocalypse are so important to watch.
They're so cool. You have to watch. There's a new episode on season 2 about ayahuasca and tobacco. And they talk about some of these ancient civilizations who aligned villages to the stars. They found all these Pueblo communities in New Mexico and then some in Ohio. So they're discovering more. It's not just, it's here too in the United States.
Oh yeah. There's so much underneath our feet that we have no idea. Imagine the civilizations that could be there. In the first episode, we talk about Göbekli Tepe.
Yeah.
And a lot of like ancient apocalypse gives, because you can get a history book and it'll say, here's this, 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 and we had the gold or the Bronze Age, and then we moved into the Babylonians and then the Sumerians, and then it'll give that story, the Sumerians and the Babylonians and the Egyptians.
Yeah, in that episode, they even brought up Göbekli Tepe. They refer back to that because it's all connected.
And it's so important to know that the narrative that they've been teaching is, the narrative's changing, and that's the thing about history, is that it's, we're discovering new things. They're not making it as official as it should be. People are still learning out of books from the 80s, in the schools. It's like, what? Why?
I know.
That is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Watching shows like that, you will learn so much about history. I mean, that opens up the key to start diving into so many more things. And then you'll look into the Anunnaki, the Book of Enoch, the Book of Giants, and then drawing the parallels between all the different ancient religions, like ancient Rome, ancient Greece, ancient Egyptian. The Nephilim and the gods and the fallen angels, they all tie together. They're just different names.
Yeah.
And they're the same stories, just different names.
I know.
And it's so wild. And then we're living here in 2024. No, it's 2025. And people are glued to their smartphones, their TVs, their gaming, they're on social media.
The distractions.
The distractions on the greater purpose. The evil in power doesn't want people to understand the greater purpose and the greater picture and why we're here, and to just give up all their rights. And I mean, they've been using religion as a form of control for eons and eons and eons. That was the big one for more of our present age, the Common Era, CE, since Jesus's birth, when we break up BCE before Common Era, which is the same as BC, you know, and then there's AD, which is essentially CE, Common Era. The main form of control in the Common Era is the religions of Christianity, Islam, Judaism. And then we have, obviously, Hinduism and Buddhism. But the Abrahamic religions that go back to the prophet Abraham is Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. And they want those three groups fighting so much, even though they have the common ancestor. They have the common prophets. And Islam, I believe, Muhammad views Jesus as, like, the best prophet. Muhammad love Jesus. And it's very interesting to know about that.
There's something I think that everyone could find, at the very least, totally fascinating, whether you want to believe it or not.
It's humanity's history. It's how we got here. And a final thought, there was a website, Folklore and Fairy Tales. I was researching the Book of Enoch on there and just looking into some stuff. And this article has a whole portion of it devoted to Enoch and electricity and Tesla. And I thought that was really interesting. So the whole story that we've talked about with zero point energy and Nikola Tesla, it gives a big part about that. But what the passage that they're taking from the Book of Enoch, it's quoted from this article. It says, some say the second passage, while discussing lights and thunder, could also be the revelation of the ways and means to generate electricity. So something to go take a little peek into. But I thought that was pretty interesting, because I'm like, oh, look, there's Tesla again, harnessing the secrets of the universe and abundant energy, which they have. Those are the drones and UFOs right now that are all over the East Coast. But we hope this has sparked some interest into some ancient history and stories that were discovered from a little cave in the Middle East. In Qumran, the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Book of Enoch, and the Book of Giants. I want you to take a moment to relax. Use your imagination and imagine some of the towering mountains that are surrounding us. Some of them are eerily familiar to what might look like a fallen giant. It really will make you sit and ponder. When we get our Himalayan salt, imagine that is the fossilized flesh of a of a giant. As miners are burrowing their way through a mountain, they hit the ruby, and that's its heart. The sapphire is its veins. The emeralds are its boogers. Does it seem plausible? Does it seem possible? Considering the uncanny resemblance some of these mountains have to giants, and some of these towers resemble trees. Well, we can't rule it out at this point, can we?